And it looks very much like this spider that was walking on Manjushri one time during service this week. Yes. Did you see that?
Yes, I did.
It could be, you know, an incarnation of Xuanxia coming to check up on us talking about him. Excuse me. I feel like it took personally me a couple of days to like settle into this mode of investigating Dogen like this, and but now the flame is lit, and I feel like you know, we've been studying this old Indian sutra so much this practice period, and not attending so much to the Zen ancestors, and just the more we go into this, the more I feel like, oh man, we are so blessed with this crazy, absurd Zen tradition. The way these people talk, it's outrageous, and but it's incredibly amazing, I feel like. So Sashin helps for that. Now we've finished investigating the whole universe and one bright pearl. Now we have the expression, how can a student understand that? This is the last few lines of the first page. The expression, how can a student understand that, makes it seem as if the question originates in the student's deluded karmic consciousness, but in reality it is the great model itself manifesting as this functional appearance. So there's a lot going on in this sentence. To start with, taking a look at karmic consciousness, that's the sixth consciousness, influenced by the seventh. If you remember the Yogacara presentation, just mental consciousness that is aware of objects, and it arises out of the storehouse, which is the karmic disposition's storehouse. So we could also call that karmic consciousness in a way. And then we have this, influenced by all these karmic patterns, we have the sixth mental consciousness, and it's influenced by the seventh, which is the sense of the self that's making everything into a self due to karmic dispositions. So the habitual consciousness, we could say, or active consciousness, but particularly influenced by karma. Karma consciousness. So, in the Book of Serenity, in Case 37, we have this story called Guishan's karmic consciousness, this same term. And I think it relates to what Dogen's going to do with this, so I bring this up. Guishan asks Yangshan, if someone suddenly said, all sentient beings just have karmic consciousness, boundless and unclear, with no fundamental or foundation to rely on, how would you prove that in experience? These are teacher and student, Guishan and Yangshan. Teacher's asking the student, how would you prove that all sentient beings just have karmic consciousness with no foundation to rely on? And Yangshan said, like this. If a monk comes, I call, "Hey, you." And if he turns his head, I say, "What is it?" If he hesitates, I say, not only is that person's active karmic consciousness boundless and unclear, they have no fundamental to rely on. Guishan said, "Good, good. That's a good test." So, somebody comes, we say, "Hey, you," and they turn their head. That seems not so much like karmic consciousness. That just seems like spontaneous response to conditions. No dispositions in order to do that. We could say there's a slight disposition, just that we understand the words "Hey, you" in our language. So if somebody says that when we're in the vicinity, we just turn. But it's pretty spontaneous and not very complicated, and not much suffering and affliction there. It's just response to conditions. "Hey, you," or, you know, a loud sound. We jump. It's just cause and effect. But then when they turn and say, "What is it?" Then, if it's especially, you know, if a monk comes, maybe ordinary people, you can say, "What is it?" And they say, "Well, what's what? What are you talking about?" But this was this Zen thing to ask, "What is it?" So if he's a Zen monk, he goes, "I don't know." Or, "What's the... bright pearl, bright pearl." Too late, too late. So if he hesitates, which monks usually do when the teacher especially asks, "What is it?" Or when the teacher says, "Speak quickly, quickly." Ah! So that's like due to karmic consciousness, boundless and unclear. And another story in the commentary brings this out, these two sides, even more explicitly. So this monk asked, Yunnan, the treatise on the Flower Ornament Sutra says that the fundamental affliction of ignorance is itself the immutable knowledge of all Buddhas. This principle is most profound and mysterious in the extreme, difficult to comprehend. My friend Henry, this is his favorite Dharma phrase. The fundamental affliction of ignorance itself is the immutable knowledge of all Buddhas. He uses it as his kind of email signature. And I guess this treatise says that this is most profound and mysterious, very difficult to comprehend. And so Yunnan says to this monk, actually, this is most distinctly clear. It's very easy to understand. And watch, I'll show you. So, similar situation. At that moment, a boy happened to be sweeping there, you know, maybe a novice monk or something. Yunnan called to him, and the boy turned his head, just like in this story. And Yunnan pointed and said, "Is this not the immutable knowledge of all Buddhas? Isn't this just a perfect, uncontrived response?" He just turned his head. And (clears throat) Yunnan then asked the boy, "What is your Buddha nature?" The boy looked around at a loss and left. I'll be going now. Yunnan said, "Is this not the fundamental affliction of ignorance?" So they're both there in that same person, one immediately following the other. And then Wansong, the commentator here, says, if you can comprehend this, then you become a Buddha immediately. The fundamental affliction of ignorance and the boundless karmic consciousness are the same, he says. Yunnan and Yangshan, the teachers who were testing in this way, he said, also had boundless karmic consciousness. Also, the examples brought up one of these situations that Baijiang was known for this. He would go into the hall and sit on the Dharma talk seat, and when the assembly had gathered, he would start swinging his staff around and driving them out, and then as they were all running away, he would call, and when they turned their heads, he'd say, "What is it?" Everywhere, this is called Baijiang's hall leaving phrase. It too should be investigated thoroughly. He was known for this. It's another story, another case in the Book of Serenity here. So now we're looking at how can a student understand that? Makes it seem as if this question originates in the student's deluded karmic consciousness. If he just heard the whole universe in 10 directions is one bright pearl, and it's like, hi, got it. Now back to Zazen. Very clear, but he's like, how can I understand this? Is it kind of like this hesitation, right? Kind of like this. What do I do with this one bright pearl? So it might seem as if this question originates in the karmic consciousness of the asker, but in reality it is the great model or great standard itself manifesting as the functional appearance. So of course this is referring to another Zen story. It's just like stringing all these references together is what Dogen is so great at. And the the footnote says Dogen gives a twist to a well-known teaching phrase of the Zen teacher Yunnan. So we've all heard this, right? Well known, maybe to him. And Yunmen's phrase is, "The manifestation of the great function knows no laws or standards." So this is probably in the context of something longer, but Yunmen said, "The manifestation of the great function." Dai Yugen. So this is the function or use is the same character that's used for what's the use of what does he say again? What's the use of understanding? Thank you. What's the use of understanding? Or what's the, so we could translate that also as what's the function of understanding. So this is the great use manifestation, and this is the gen of Genjo Koan, actualization, manifestation. The manifestation of the great function knows no laws. We could translate this word ki, laws or model, it is here, capital letters, or standard, or like rule, or principle. I know it's used in like the, we have our, the Soto Shu Gyoji Kihan, the standard observances for the Soto school. It's like our ceremony manual. So it's like the rules, principles, standard versions of forms. It has to do with that kind of thing. Rules, forms, ceremonial standards. Model. So Yunmen says, the manifestation of the great function knows no standards. In other words, it's free of all like rules, laws, standards, templates. Yeah, maybe that would work. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's free of all those kind of, we could say, contrived human standards. And so Dogen twists it, turns it, and says, instead of saying the functional appearance is free of the great model, he says, in reality, it's the great model itself manifesting as the functional appearance. So it's like the opposite meaning of Yunmen's original phrase. It's like saying the great law or standard is actually manifesting as the great function. So, we could hear it as the, you know, especially since they capitalized it here, the great model, as like not just a human construct, but as the one bright pearl. Using this, you know, it's a real twist of Yunmen's statement, it seems. But it's kind of making the one bright pearl into like the standard or the model or the template that everything is based on. And that standard is manifesting as the functional appearance. So it seems like this question is arising from his hesitation and deluded karmic consciousness, but in reality, if we say it's the bright pearl as the great standard manifesting as this, manifestation of the function, of the great function. Actually, says the great standard manifesting as the great functional appearance. So this is what Dogen often does with these. He gives a lot of credit to what seems like the more deluded person in any given exchange. He raises their expression to the level of pure manifestation of great function. And sometimes he does that, which he doesn't do in this case. But often he'll take a question word like, how can a student understand that, and turn it more into like a statement. That actually, he's not confused and asking, how can I understand that? It's more like he's making a statement. The whole, I hear you have this saying, the whole universe is one bright pearl. How you understand it? How is the way you understand it? How is the way I understand it? How, meaning like, one bright pearl, actually. How is like, how and what and who. Dogen uses these questioning words as positive statements, meaning like the ineffable, the full expression of the ungraspable, the indescribable. So what is it? Can be a question, or it can be what it is. So Dogen does this a lot, and he comments in that way, and this in one of his very early essays. Maybe he wasn't into that mode yet, because it's a prime candidate for commenting on it in that way, to say, how can a student understand that? But same principle, I would say, to say that, well, it seems like that's just a deluded question coming from karma consciousness, but in reality, it's this great standard manifesting as functional appearance. We could also say the great standard with capital letters is like the thoroughly established with capital letters manifesting as the other dependent character, that emptiness, complete non-reachability takes the form of appearance as a bright jewel and as a question, that everything that's happening is actually like a manifestation of bright jewel, even this question. Yes.
I cheated and looked ahead.
Yes.
Because it's just too exciting not to.
Yes.
And I'm not going to be here.
That's not cheating.
Okay, good. He says on the next page that the question or any expression is, such as what is the use of understanding, is after all the occasion of its manifesting.
Mm-hmm.
Does that seems to...
Similar, right?
Well, yeah, it's like, in reality, it is the great model itself manifesting, even though it seems like it's coming from his delusion. Again, it's that whole thing of, that we awaken as at the point of pain.
Mm-hmm.
We, by knowing what we're holding on to, we then have the opportunity to release.
Yeah.
So this feels like that to me, that here, when he's saying, it's like asking the question, There it is. That's the occasion it's manifesting.
Yeah, so
in this verbal game that we're playing. Otherwise we would just be quiet.
So even if he didn't say it as a statement of this is how it is, even if he sincerely asked the question, still that's coming forth and expressing.
Well, yeah, it reminds me of in Dotoku, which is, I always talk about that because it's one of my favorite stories, where he says, express the truth and I will not shake your head. It doesn't matter what the other guy says, because he's just there.
Yes, yes.
So it doesn't matter what he says.
Yeah.
It's already done.
I think that's a great point, and I plan on bringing up Dotoku because it's used in here, that phrase.
Oh,
so,
God.
And I remembered that you said that was one of your favorites.
Oh,
so yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. So that's it. That's that term. This may be one of Dogen's first uses, because this is Dogen's third essay. So it may be the first time he takes up Dotoku. But some of the footnotes say Dogen uses this phrase throughout his writings later, and in fact names a whole essay after it. So we'll get into that later in the next paragraph. But yeah, same principle in this one, that asking is manifesting the great function. I think he's going to emphasize this, you know, expression part more in the next paragraph. Yes. It's hard to know exactly what he's saying, but it comes from this Yunmen statement that's saying that the functional appearance is free of all standards and laws. So here it sounds like Yunmen in the original is kind of criticizing this idea of like human standards. And in this case, Dogen turns it and says, makes it like the source of everything. And so it's very strange that it's capitalized with no comment on why it's capitalized. Shohaku Okamura commenting on this line here, explained it as standards, as particularly human standards, and he mentioned but that manifest in like laws of the universe in a way. And so he mentioned like the Bodhisattva precepts as an idea of a great model or great standard, that humans came up with it, and yet it also like is this universal principle of not killing and not stealing and so on. It wasn't so clear where he was going with that either, but if we say that it's like it's like the way things are as we see them manifesting in any way that manifestation happens. I think this is a kind of open place here that's one of the less clear parts, especially referencing this phrase of Yunmen. How is that connected here? It seems like if he's and because usually Dogen, even if he's playing and turning around a phrase like that, he often there's some specific connection that he brings up that particular phrase. So if Yunmen's thing is about manifestation is free from all like, you know, human constructions and so on, that this human construction kind of law or standard sounds related to like karmic consciousness, the kind of stuck in karmic patterns, and that Yunmen would say functional manifestation is free from that. So in that way, it's kind of similar to turn it and say, actually, just like this looks like karmic consciousness being the source of things, it's actually free from karmic consciousness. But yet karmic consciousness also produces it. Just like the functional appearance is free from the great from laws, and yet laws manifest as the great function. I think it's a little clunky, but that actually makes some sense to me. There's a kind of parallel thing going on with, you know, karmic consciousness being turned into something maybe quite wonderful, and these like contrived laws being turned into the source of expression, manifestation.
Yeah. Philosophers and mathematicians like to use the terms general case and special case. Special cases are manifestations of the general case. So now, a lot of the confusion comes when we confuse a special case as a general case when it's not. That's why this is kind of pointing to that. But if we get to the suchness of the special case, we can get a sense for the suchness of the general case. The general case is suchness. But we only see it, there's the suchness of this, of this, of this, our idea, of our feeling. If we just accept this and this and this as the general case, this is real, this exists, we'll never get to what he's pointing to. But getting to the suchness of this pen, we can get very close to it.
Yes. So like Xuanzha says to the monk who says, please give me a place to enter. Do you hear the sound of the stream? That's your place of entry. Not like a kind of abstract idea of like, okay, just meditate on suchness now. You know, enter with this sound. And I can't help responding to this by bringing up this this teaching of within Buddha Dharma, very, very similar, maybe the same as this Western philosophical system of, we have these terms, svalakshana and samanya lakshana. Remember, lakshana means characteristic, or the three lakshanas of all phenomena. And the svalakshanas are like the own characteristics, but often it's translated as specific characteristics, and samanya means like general characteristics. And the svalakshana is what you have, the only thing you can have a direct experience of is the specific marks, like you know, color and so on, or a specific thing, like you say, like a pen. And then general characteristics are like more abstract things, like the idea of pens in general. And so in early Buddhist systems, they would say these like specific characteristics are like truth, and that general ideas are just like mental constructs, so they're not.
The general case of knowing is not knowing.
The general case of knowing.
Special case of knowing, I know this chair,
mm-hmm.
is not knowing. So when you ask a question like this, like this kid asks, he's basically breaking what he knows when he says, how's a student like me to understand this? That break point is an opening to the general case of suchness. In this way, the great function manifests.
Although in the Buddhist system, they would say the general characteristics are like not a good access point. Like you can't really maybe even access suchness through general characteristics because they're just abstractions. That you have to go to the specific case actually.
There's a special case. Student is saying, how's a student like me?
Yeah.
So that's a special case.
Yeah.
But he's breaking himself. He's putting himself on report. Saying, how do I get there? Because I can't. And then the next day, the teacher comes back and says, so, how do you understand? What is your understanding of this? Well, he didn't. Pass that test, but it was like, okay, now you have a chance to liberate yourself from suffering. You know, if you can get to how you understand this, what's your understanding of this? He had a chance to say something like, the great pearl is a great pearl.
You know?
So, but he didn't. But this is, this, and so therefore he's caught in the cave of his thinking. But everything, this is the opportunity, I think, Dogen's talking about, opportunity to port the open door. Right? This is every one of these, our infatuations with a special case is an opportunity to go, duh, and open up to the ineffable. That's how I read it. I don't know if that's right, but.
Yeah, and it's through questioning.
Through questioning.
So,
deep questioning.
Yeah, deep questioning. So we have, you could also look at, these two original phrases of, you know, how can I understand this? That kind of active questioning is a kind of that's coming forth and manifesting. That's like dependent co-arising. That's like appearing in this universe to ask a question, and then the whole universe is one bright pearl. What's it got to do with understanding? Is like levels the whole field, and just it's like there's nothing happening there. There's almost like there's no function at that point. And so we could say that's like an emptiness side, and then the questioning is like the dependent co-arising side, and they both work together, these two sides. questioning and beyond questioning. And they're both equally important. Continuing, you can make a foot of water into a 1 foot wave, which is to say, make a 10 foot pearl into a 10 foot brilliance. So this water and wave thing, we have that. We had that. Maybe we talked about in terms of like the storehouse consciousness. They mentioned that image there of like there's like a river, and then there can be all these multiple waves that are in this one river. And in this case, we could also see it as you can take the one bright pearl and make it into like a question. You can make a foot of water into a foot of wave. You can take the ineffable, unquestionable Buddha nature and make it into consciousness. You can take a inconceivable pearl and make it into brightness, brilliance. So a foot of water into a 1 foot wave, a 10 foot pearl into the 10 foot bright. It's the same, you know, bright of the pearl. So if you split those, if you split the one bright pearl into like the pearl, you know, beyond brightness, there's like nothing that even manifests, nothing that even shows, but you can make that pearl into the bright. I think because they're to show that they're exactly the same size. That it's not like you take this great vast emptiness and make it into like this little manifestation. It's like they're the same size. If it's 1 foot of emptiness, that's 1 foot of manifestation. If it's a 10 foot pearl, it's not like you take a giant universal size pearl and make it into like a little bit of shining. It's like I think it's about the non-duality of the expression and the source of the expression. And just to put the length in there is to make it really specific that it's really non-dual. It's really not a different size. That the water doesn't get diminished when it becomes a wave, and that the pearl doesn't lose its round edgelessness when it becomes brightness. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm just intrigued because he uses the size of things over and over and over and over again in different ways, not just here.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking for, you know, when he first talks about the whole universe as one bright pearl, they're square and around, neither vast and expansive nor minute and small.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sizes there, and I think in general, when Dogen gets into sizes, which is true, he gets into lengths and weights and different kinds of measures. He brings them up, and I think it's not just Dogen. I think it's in other Zen earlier Zen teachings too. And I think that's about it's just about being very specific. It's about like, you know, a particular manifestation. Again, this point about the particular and the universal, specific and universal, it's being very specific, and it's emphasizing not an abstract manifestation, but a very particular one. I think that's where it numbers, and it's kind of just, you know, it's a weird way of doing it, but that seems to be when measures and numbers come up in Dogen, that that's what he's doing. Making something, you know, Nishijima Roshi, the translator, constantly using this word concrete. I think it's going a little far, you know, it sounds like cement. And because manifestations, you know, that sounds like inherent existence or something really solidified. I think concrete's a little more than manifestation, but I think we get a specific manifestation just exactly like this without saying that's concrete. But the word concrete comes to mind with, you know, 7 miles, and there's another, you know, number thing later, a couple paragraphs later in here too. Yeah. Some other translations for the for this section is even if it seems that the monk was sporting active consciousness, it is the great function manifesting being a great rule. Going onward, one should cause a foot of water, a foot of wave, to stand out high. This is what is called 10 feet of jewel, 10 feet of brightness. That's quite different. Although you could see it in as a similar idea that just the non-difference between the, like, the ocean and the specific manifestation as a wave, the pearl and the specific manifestation as brightness. These words appear to be the monk's expression of ignorance, but the great function emerges right here, actualizing the great principle. That actually, this is causes, that sounds maybe the most clear, but it might be interpreting it to make it make sense. The great function emerges right here, actualizing the great principle. Step forward and penetrate 1 foot of water, 1 foot of wave, 10 feet of pearl, 10 feet of illumination. Maybe another way to see this thing as a manifestation too is what's being talked about here, is that this question is not just the diluted karmic consciousness question, it's this great model. So therefore, the if you keep going with it, that the ocean, the water, is like the great model or great standard, and that the waves are like asking the question, yeah. And that the pearl is like the great standard, and that the brightness is like asking the question. It's like the one pearl is shining as people talking and doing stuff, and that's the shine. That's the radiance of the pearl. It's not like a dead, lifeless pearl. It's bright and shining due to people saying stuff like, how can I understand? That works. It's like the radiance of the pearl.
Activity of consciousness, is that the pearl?
How about that's the radiance of the pearl?
Yeah,
the activity of the pearl. If we say, we can make analogies of the... Now he's kind of, this is the first time he's separated the pearl and the brightness. But if we say if we take the eight consciousnesses thing, we could say Alaya Vijnana, the whole storehouse of everything that's, you know, unseen, just flowing like a river, is like the pearl, and the all the different consciousnesses that emanate out of it, all the sense organs that... like waves arising on the surface and sinking back in, are like the brightness of the pearl, like the kind of halo around the edges of the pearl. Or if we talk about the three natures, I still feel like this pearl is like the other dependent character, and then we could say the brightness of it is like the specific manifestations of dependent co-arising, like altars and platforms and ceilings, and those, that's like the brightness of the whole one pearl. As a, the brightness is expressed as all these, all of us specific things. And then the, you know, what's it got to do with understanding, again, seems to be like, well, like, what's it, what's the person got to do with the hat? Okay. What's the manifestation got to do with anything we can think or say about it, any questions about it? It's completely free. The question is never needed. Again, Hueka's, I am always clearly aware and words don't reach it. I'm always clearly a bright pearl, and what's, you know, any question about it, understanding doesn't reach it. Words in the form of understanding don't reach it. And the clarity of that awareness is like the brightness of the pearl. And then to ask in a kind of karmic consciousness kind of way, well, I really want to understand this and get a hold of it, is like this imputational, like, let's, we want to know this pearl. And yet, as Dogen's expressing here, wanting to know it, that the imputational itself is also just another manifestation of the other dependent. So when I was talking about in the class about how the to meditate on the, you know, three characteristics of each of the three characteristics, and particularly the other dependent character of the imputational character. And I, you know, I personally have almost stumbled into that meditation using those ideas, and because the sutra doesn't talk about doing that, but in actually contemplating it that way, very, very wonderful. I think that's, in a way, that meditation is the same as the last paragraph of this essay, that like all our doubts and problems and concerns and thoughts and confusion are all the one bright pearl. It's like saying all our imputations and thoughts and imaginations of essence and things, actually when we look at what all that stuff actually is, where does it come from? It's not like there really is this like inherent imagination. It's just another part of the pearl. It's just another part of dependent co-arising, arising from our storehouse consciousness. And if we don't take it so seriously, it's not so painful. In expressing what can be expressed, this is now dōtoku, this expression, dōtoku, which literally means like complete expression, or like, you know, it's emphasizing the fullness of expression. In expressing what can be expressed, Shren Sha says, the whole universe is one bright pearl. What's the use of understanding? This expression, dōtoku, expresses the fact that Buddha succeeds Buddha, ancestors succeed ancestors, and Shren Sha succeeds Shren Sha. Even if you try to avoid succession, you cannot do it, because even if you avoid it for a while, any expression, and the translator put in, such as, what's the use of understanding, is, after all, the occasion of its manifesting. So, a...
the important word there, can, expressing what can be expressed.
Which, let's see, where is can?
In the very beginning of this paragraph. In expressing what can be expressed.
Uh-huh.
He emphasized that. In other words, succession is not something maybe... Succession is a convenient term, isn't it?
Convenient?
Yeah, because in the thoroughly established, there's no what succession
mm-hmm.
established.
Mm-hmm.
But we can only express it like a one grain pearl, one bright pearl.
Mm.
Okay, that's an object class.
Mm.
And that's the best we can do in terms of what can be expressed. Mm. Nevertheless, that does express the whole, but we cannot grasp the whole, but it does express it. Is that what he's saying there?
We can't grasp the whole, but yeah, we have to express something in the realm of the other dependent. We have to express. In fact, the other dependent is expression. It's the expression of the universe as one bright pearl and as everything within one bright pearl. I'll mention in a minute a little bit more about this succession thing to see how it's maybe about a specific kind of relationship. But dōtoku, so this shobogenzo dōtoku expression, Dōgen starts saying, when there are Buddhas and ancestors, there is expression. Therefore, when ancestors select successors, they inquire whether they can express themselves or not. This question is not merely verbal, but is asked with body and mind, with staff and whisk, with pillars and lanterns. If there are no ancestors, the question is never asked, nor is there any expression, because there's no occasion for it. So this fits in very nicely to this one by pearl essay, right?
Because the second day he was asking the student to express himself, the student expressed his teaching.
Mm, yep, yeah. And it's like that. The question must be asked. Uh-huh. It must be expressed. There would be no story here if there was no expression. And the response, Shuanzha's response, is also an expression, but the response would never have arisen without the question.
So the first day, the student asks, how can a student like me understand this? The teacher is saying, I am an expression of it. What's there for you to understand? I am an expression of it.
And you are an expression of it.
And you are too, but you have to say that for yourself. Mm. I can't tell you that.
Mm.
So, what's there for you to understand about my expressing the pearl?
And I think it's important to know, too, that he wasn't, like, criticizing the monk for asking. He wasn't saying, well, it's just one by pearl. What's it got to do with understanding? No. I don't, you can hear it that way, but I hear more like, that's a great question. Now, here's a response of the moment. And it has to do with your question. And it's not belittling your question in the slightest. It's just you expressed and now I will express. And now we're into this, so now the next day I'm going to ask you to express some more.
And express yourself.
Express yourself.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so this issue about succession, it is this word shi, the love, shiho, dharma, transmission, dharma inheritance, dharma succession. It's that she. So he's playing with this idea here, of like dharma succession, but in this case, we can also see it as the. So there's these two sentences of Shuanzha, right? The whole universe is one bright pearl. And then what's the use of understanding? And we can hear it. So, and if we hear that as the first one is about the other dependent and the second is about the thoroughly established, whether we link it together like that or not, we can hear it like, what is the use of understanding succeeds the whole universe is one bright pearl. So the whole universe is one bright pearl transmits to what is the use of understanding. And they're not really different. The other dependent and the thoroughly established, this is our discussion that will hopefully continue in this class. They can intimately succeed each other because they're not really different, and yet they are actually unique. They have their own names, and one is about manifestation and appearance. The other dependent manifests and appears, and the thoroughly established is about non-manifestation and non-appearance. And so this non-appearance can succeed to appearance. This is how I'd like to say it for now. What's the use of understanding succeeds to the whole universe is one bright pearl. Can you follow that a little bit?
No.
It's weird. But Dogen can be weird. Yes.
Do all the translations use the word succeed and succession?
This saying is an expression of Buddhas succeeding to Buddhas. These words are an expression that Buddhas inherit from Buddhas. Ancestors inherit. And that word shi means succession, heritage, inheritance, succeed. In Dharma transmission, we usually say there's denpo, is transmitting Dharma from the point of view of the teacher, transmits, and from the point of the student, it's inheriting or succeeding to Dharma. So they same meaning, but one's from the recipient and one's from the giver. Shiho is used more commonly actually for this concept. So this expression expresses the fact that Buddha succeeds Buddha, ancestors succeed ancestors. So we could say it's like there's an intimacy between these two sentences. There's this great intimacy, which means like there's a little difference, but they're very related. You can't actually have one without the other, right? I mean, maybe you could have one bright pearl without saying what's the use of understanding, but you can't really say what's the use of understanding without referring to one bright pearl. You can't really have the thoroughly established absence of the imputation in the other dependent without the other dependent. Emptiness, you can't have emptiness without dependent arising. And emptiness and dependent arising are not exactly the same thing, but they're not exactly different. Dependent arising, the way that they're... For a long time, I kept asking, they seem like exactly the same thing. My teacher said, no, you have to see how they're not exactly the same thing. And now it seems quite clear that they're not, because emptiness is an absence. There's no arising. Emptiness is no arising. Dependent arising is arising. One's a positive manifestation, and one's a non-manifestation. Yeah.
I think what makes it hard is that for so many years, it seems like that we've been, at least my understanding was, or emptiness is often defined as codependent arising. Emptiness as in it contains everything and therefore it's empty of separate self.
Uh-huh.
Implies to me a relational...
It's very relational, very relational. One succeeds.
I've always thought of that as the codependent arising, and so it's hard to realize
or
consider the three.
How they're different, yeah. And yet one implies the other. They're very, very intimate. One succeeds to the other. It's a beautiful way to put it. I mean, this is an interpretation, but I think that works in that way, that emptiness is not exactly, it's not that emptiness is dependent co-arising, but the reason things are empty is because they dependently co-arise. At least that's the Madhyamaka system. Because everything depends on everything, therefore it lacks independent existence, and the lack of independent existence is emptiness. But it's a little different to say things lack independent existence and things dependently co-arise. They're very, you know, one means the other, one implies the other, one proves the other, but one's about the arising, and emptiness, the lack, is the lack of independent existence, which is just a lack. It's an absence. That's why it's called emptiness.
If I can remind myself that it's three different aspects of the same thing, then that makes it easier for me to realize that I don't have to separate them, because that's the whole point, is that they're not...
They're not separate.
They're different characteristics of phenomena.
Yeah.
But the one bright pearl, it's like there's this unifying aspect.
Well, you could say
it's
there
not like there's these three universes. That's not what the teaching is.
No, they're completely, especially those two. Now, if we're talking about the three characteristics, the imputational seems a little less related, but still, we can...
No, that's the way we get in.
That's the way we get in.
Yeah, we've been saying that all the time.
So
that's our...
So they're all completely interconnected, and I think with this three characteristics thing, again, it's so important to say all phenomena have all three, therefore, but we can talk about them differently, and the point of that sutra is distinguishing the differences, because when we see the relationship, even though they're very similar, when we start to look, they maybe even start to melt into each other, but then we're saying, no, pull them apart again, just to look, to have a look. Because when we see the relationship, that the relationship between those three is what creates samsara and nirvana. Like seeing how, you know, confusing one for the other, basically, even though they're all like aspects of the same thing.
Yes. And backing up one sentence too, that segues into this, Kathy was talking about a thing. The great model of self manifesting as this functional appearance, if all that we can nominate is real, put that way, nominate is real, all phenomena, has these three characteristics, doesn't this suggest then that the three, that the pearl's basic function is impermanence, codependent, arising, and suchness? All phenomena, all manifestations have those three characteristics. Therefore, that is the great model.
You keep wanting to define the pearl.
No, I'm trying to get back to Buddha's insight into the tree.
Are we talking about the three characteristics of the other, meaning the other dependent, the imputational, and the thoroughly established, or suchness, those three?
Well, yes, but
you mentioned impermanence.
In terms of Bodhgaya, we're talking about impermanence, talking about the four seals.
So the three early three characteristics.
Well, early, late,
Well, there's these three different lists, right, of three characteristics. Yeah. One is impermanence, no self, and suffering. Right? That's the early list of called three characteristics. And then this new Mahayana innovation of the Yogacara sutras, that's like, you know, and we talked about in the class how you can kind of match them up too, right? That other dependent is kind of like impermanence, and no self is kind of like the thoroughly established, and imputational is kind of like suffering, and that it's what creates suffering, grasping.
So when we
but there's two different lists.
When we, in any of the lists, when we overemphasize anything but all three, we suffer.
Yeah, we have to see the whole picture.
We have to see the whole picture, and we don't suffer.
And in this case, since I'm breaking down these parts of this dialogue into these three characteristics, I think we need the whole dialogue. We can't just say the whole universe is one by pearl. We have to say that, then we have to ask, how can I understand this? You have to do this imputation in order to start relating to the one bright pearl. How can I actually understand it? And then we have to hear, understanding doesn't reach it. That actually, what's it got to do with understanding? If the monk hadn't asked, how can I understand this? He never would have heard that actually understanding can't reach it. That's its thoroughly established character. So, you know, maybe enough to just hear that the whole universe is one by pearl, but then there's this relation to, like, you know, knowing it or understanding it and naming it and grasping it as a pearl. So I think this, you know, this dialogue is this wonderful expression of these three characteristics. I think it maps very nicely onto that. Maybe that's just the way my mind works, but we have the other dependent pearl. We have this doubting, suffering situation of, like, how can I understand it? And then we have actually understanding will never reach it. Not just because we can't figure it out, but, like, it's impossible. What's it have to do with understanding? How could understanding ever capture this inconceivable, shining, other-dependent jewel? And if we talk about that the, you know, understanding never reaching it, succeeding to it, that the impossibility of understanding the jewel is the disciple of the jewel. Even if you try to avoid succession, you cannot do it, because even if you avoid it for a while, like one way to avoid it might be just let me hear one, the whole universe is one by pearl. Let's just stop there, okay? That's enough. That says it all. Like, let's forget, you know, all this stuff about knowing and not knowing, extra. Well, for a while, we can avoid this issue of understanding and knowing. But eventually, even if you avoid it for a while, any expression is, after all, the occasion of its manifesting. Succeeding to the thoroughly established cannot be avoided. Because any time complete expression happens, it's right there. The other dependent and its ungraspability is revealed in a complete expression.
So succession does not imply supersede.
Supersede?
Yeah.
What's that mean?
It means renders the prior obsolete.
Renders the prior obsolete. No.
No, it doesn't.
Sometimes in Zen, there are stories that make it sound like that.
Yeah.
Like the fifth ancestor, he basically just, you know, he passed on the robe and bowl in the middle of the night to the rice pounder, right? And then he stopped teaching. Right? He stopped giving Dharma talks, and they started asking, well, what's going on? You haven't given talk in like a week. And he said, well, my dharma's gone south. Sounded like he kind of expired. So maybe, possible.
So
they say, you know, you kill your teacher.
Yeah. But this, seems to be said here is that complexity is inevitable, but it never conquers simplicity.
Yeah, that's why we can say, what's it got to do with understanding?
So in a sense, the one bright pearl is, can be also expressed as perfectly simple.
It's perfectly simple, not obvious, as was said in an earlier paragraph, not obvious because it's too simple. What was that other phrase of Xuanzha? I think, was it Xuanzha or his student, Dizang? One of them said, why can't I realize it? Something like that. And because it's too close. It's too simple. It's too simple. So for us not to ask, how can I understand this? So if it's so simple, why does Dogen do this kind of stuff? Maybe it's to check if we can deal with so many words and ideas and not lose the simplicity. Mm-hmm. And that's, again, it's like expression. It's like to say, it's so simple, let's just like stop talking, okay? And just sit, which we'll do soon. but that's like avoiding expression, avoiding do, toku. And one of the footnotes said that this expression doesn't have to be verbal either. It's often, it can just, but it's manifestation. It's expression. It's not nothing. The thoroughly established is almost like nothing, but the other dependent is like something. That's how they're different. But nothing and something are very intimate, so something can succeed nothing. And does that render nothing impotent? No, not in that case, but when there's something, there's just something. When there's nothing, there's just nothing. And then when there's confusion about that, about trying to figure out what something is, there's just that confusion. When we see the confusion, it never really disturbs something, disturbs anything. That's like the nothing of the confusion. That's kind of confusing.
Good place to end.
May our intention equally extend to every being and place with the true merit of Buddha's way. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's ways unsurpassable. I vow to become it.